Good evening, everyone. I am delighted to be participating in this wonderful event. Thank you, Frankie, Susan, and the entire Hayden's Ferry Review team for publishing my translation, for organizing and hosting this event, and for inviting me to be a part of it. Tonight, I am zooming in from St. Petersburg, Florida, where it is nice and warm. Turning to Asna's introduction of the piece, thank you, Asna. You did a real nice job. You pretty much said everything that needed to be said. This text is actually a letter written by Ali to a close friend, Ayşe Sıtkı İlhan. I will add just 2 points about the author before getting on with my reading. The first point is an obvious one and probably true for other authors as well. I used to think that one could get to know Ali by reading his stories and novels. But after reading his personal letters, which I only recently discovered, and there are quite a few of them, I realized that the best way to get to know him, the man that he was, is through his letters. To me, these letters are treasures. My second point is about a short but significant passage in the letter where Ali talks about the prospects of global warming in an understated and suggestive tone. But I must warn you, the passage is really short, and if you blink, you may miss it. What's amazing about this is the fact that Ali wrote the letter in 1932, some 92 years ago, when global warming was not such a hot topic. This, in my view, is only a small testament to Ali's brilliance, foresight, and intellect. It is for good reason that although he died more than 70 years ago, Ali's legacy endures and even grows. Here is A Stroll Under the Moonlight by Sabahattin Ali, translated from Turkish. I wasn't thinking about writing tonight, but for some unknown reason, I developed an urge to write about anything. My head is full of such incoherent, disconnected thoughts and with such conflicting feelings, each a stranger to the others. I know no matter what I write, it will be inconsistent. So tonight I decided to write as short, disconnected sections in the style the Europeans call aphorism. The cause of my sadness and these strange feelings is the short stroll I took a little earlier under the moonlight. Tonight, I settle some long overdue scores with the moon. This moment, which I have long been avoiding, finally caught up with me. The sly moon took advantage of my defenselessness, my loneliness. Just like everyone else, my friendship with the moon started during childhood. Except I went further. Some nights I used to borrow my father's binoculars from his military days and watch the moon for many hours. I knew every line on its face. But back then we didn't say much to each other. Our real friendship, or more correctly, our relationship, I can't claim to be friends with the moon, developed in recent years. The moon looks the same everywhere. It has seen me in many places, and it is not surprised that I appear in so many different locations. In contrast, I am surprised that it appears with its identical face everywhere. Yes, there is never a change. This is the moon I looked at, without understanding, from a boat on Potsdam Lake. It is the moon that watched me from the cold, lucid sky as I walked, chattering in the frozen snows of Templin. This is the moon that dropped in front of me in Yozgat while I was wandering the streets, waddling, and guided me home. If I look back a little, I see it opening the way to Israelites, leaving Egypt like a timid flock of ostriches to the Red Sea, sending sly smiles to Salome, that beauty wrapped in tulle, dancing at the terraces of Mahaero's castle and in front of Herod, inspiring odd ideas in Buddha, sitting cross-legged near the Ganges River, and seeping through the leaves of centuries-old trees in Sadabat, to spy on the silk face coverings of a few beauties. It is always the same moon, with not a single line ever changing. If I look forward a little, I see that when there is nothing left of me in the world, this moon will continue to rotate in its usual calm, abstinent, and nonchalant manner. Perhaps thousands of years from now, one of my limbs, by then a patch of moss stuck to a rock, will watch its same exact face, while another limb, a drop of water in the Indian Ocean by then, will rise toward it during high tide. Perhaps one day this same moon, while helping wild animals chase their prey in the wild forests covering Istanbul, will lighten by generating electricity with the help of special devices, the buildings rising toward it from a magnificent city built in the South Pole. Not even a single line of this moon ever changes. The moon I saw outside a little earlier, the moon I always see. I told this moon many things, my hopes and ambitions that I never share with anyone, my unfinished plans for the future, and at times my bitter cries too. I talk to the moon about literature, fame, and eternity that will last longer than its existence. I talked about every possible subject. The moon knows everything about me. There is, however, an unresolved issue between us that has been going on for years, and despite all my optimism, it looks like it will continue like that. Whenever I take a stroll under the moon, I feel the need to have someone next to me, someone who keeps silent or talks, whichever is more appropriate, someone who walks with me. Despite being used to loneliness at such times, I feel the need for a friend, a companion. While walking under the moonlight, I need someone on my arm who will rest her weight on my body, and I imagine that when the moon sees me alone, it asks, "Where is your friend?" In ancient times, when I was still a child, I was able to say, "Too soon, wait a little." But time doesn't stop. Indeed, I can no longer give that answer. It is also not possible to give a different answer, not the one the moon expects. Perhaps it will never be possible. There are endless number of strings in each of us, and they are all different. Sometimes two people have similar strings that produce identical voices. Then they say, "We found each other." This is only true as long as just those strings are played. If other strings are played, it becomes clear that large differences exist even between such individuals. My strings have a strange characteristic. They are capable of vibrating like all other strings. I understand everyone. In contrast, I can't help but feel a certain, not a grudge or animosity, but perhaps disdain toward those whose strings remain silent when mine vibrate. And until now, I haven't met anyone whose strings produce the same vibrations as when my strings are touched. Just like when a piano is touched, a violin located in the same room produces similar sounds. I haven't found anyone whose every string matches mine. Is failing to find such a person my fault? It's impossible to explain this to the moon. The moon, with its unchanging face, is a symbol of mediocrity, and it laughs at those who are not mediocre. The moon is as blunt as mediocrity and just as cruel and as powerful. The moon, not even a single line of which ever changes through the years, tells me with its usual detachment, mercilessness, and disregard, but at the same time with great clarity, that I am condemned to remain alone forever, and how horrible the consequence of not being ordinary is, how I would pay a heavy price for my sin of being created different than others. This is the moon I just saw outside. This is the moon we always see. I am not angry with the moon. I don't feel any resentment toward it, and I can't even imagine despising it. I know the moon is right and also very powerful.